the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations,
to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hey, Doc, this is it.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God, I still got my hair! And what on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This... it's truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
Flux capacitor storage. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
Look, all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium was available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what she wrote here, Doc. I mean... that says it all. Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, this might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. Shaziz Radio being brought to you live here via old, wore out, antique software and out of date computers. Duct tape and baling wire, that's what it is. So, anyway, we're going to do this as long as we can do that, but the sooner or later, I'm pretty sure that with all these doggone additions to, Microsoft and Google and everything, it just gets harder and harder to bring broadcast out to you live because, the doggone computers want to skip or all this craziness going on. So someday I'm going to have to either try to upgrade or just throw in the towel. That's about the best I can do. Anyway, in the meantime, try to bring good quality content of all different types of devices that are available out there and technologies that you can use to, at the very least, supplement your energy usage and, you know, find ways to be more efficient and save some money. That's about it. You know, the key to free energy, I guess, is mad science. And I'm going to make some shirts up like that to try to, you know, do a little fundraising, maybe even possibly be able to upgrade these doggone computer systems and software. Yeah, it's hard to say, but nonetheless, I'm not going to stress over that right about the moment. I posted some links over there in the chat room on the Awake Radio chat, Shaziz Radio, and the TCT Radio chat room. Several different links. The first one in line, if you click on, is a picture of an induction heating gasification unit that I drew together in paintbrush. Of course, now keep in mind, this isn't like, original concept of, mine personally. It's just a drawing. That's the date I did on it. But it takes in a couple different things like induction heating and gasification and puts them together. See, that's the whole key about this. We have all the technology available. We just got to take this technology and we got to put it in the right order in order to make things that would be super efficient. Now, with this particular device right here, this induction heating gasification unit, you could literally gasify just about any carbon-based or even petroleum-based deal and turn that into fuel again. Like, let's say, for example, you had some old used motor oil. You could gasify that back into diesel, run it back through a second time, get some what they call white gas, which would actually be more like Coleman fuel. And so there's just a couple uses right there. But you could also use, like grass clippings and stuff like that, and you can gasify it. See, back in World War One and Two, they used to have these wood gasifiers that whenever they were running low on fuel, they could actually put like wood chips and stuff inside this, basically like a boiler system. Then on the outer skin of that would have the firebox where you burn some firewood or something like that, and you use the heat from the burning of the firewood to take the material inside there and literally gasify it. You basically create wood gas. And so with that said, at the end of that process right there, the only thing you're left with is some carbon inside the deal. You know, every so often, I suppose you had to clean it out. But, you know, they also had to build some sort of bubbler system so that this thing wouldn't flash back on itself. It's kind of like the same concept of hydrogen technology. You got to have a flashback arrestor so that you don't have the fire or whatever follow back down and, you know, ignite the fuel inside the cell. And so this particular little gizmo would be just one of many ideas that you could use from induction heating. Also posted a link down there of Sky Collection because, you know, this man, he does some really amazing work. I think he speaks Spanish. I'm not actually sure. I don't speak the language that he speaks, but I understand what he's doing and what he's showing on there. He does all kinds of, basically pancake style coils and pulse motors and, basically energy transfer stuff. Pretty amazing work. So I always try to keep posting videos from this man because I like to support any of the individuals out there who are into alternative energy research. Also, I posted some links in the chat, some tiny URLs there, and Wikipedia articles about induction heating so that you can get a little bit more familiar with induction heating if you're interested. But essentially, I'll just read this first portion of Wikipedia's article on there. It says, induction heating is the process of heating an electrically conductive object, usually a metal by electromagnetic induction through the heat generated in the object by eddy currents. And induction heater consists of electromagnet and a electronic oscillator that passes a high frequency alternating current. That's something right there, high frequency alternating current. That's a key right there I'd like to also talk about. Through the electromagnet, the rapidly alternating magnetic field penetrates the object, generating electric currents inside the conductor called eddy currents. These eddy currents flow also flow through the resistance of the material. Sorry about that. My brain's half in another world right now. The eddy currents flowing through the resistance of the material heat it by Joule heating. That's another word you might want to look up. In ferromagnetic and ferromagnetic materials like iron, heat may also be generated by magnetic hysteresis losses. The frequency of current used depends on the object size, material type, coupling. Anyway, that's just a short version of it. But if you get an opportunity, look up induction heating, because there's a lot of things that it could actually go into different types of projects that you might be interested in as far as energy, heating water. They got them heaters that they call tankless water heaters, which pretty much uses the same kind of concept of induction heating to heat the water as it as it's coming through the deal. And so with that said, there's other things out there. I also posted a video of the Geek guys. There's a Paul Pantone did a design years ago where essentially he took the exhaust and designed a system to where as the exhaust is coming out of the internal combustion engine, it's heating up a rod that's inside of the basically the exhaust system, kind of like the same concept of what's going on in the catalytic converter. Whereas in a catalytic converter, it's more of a catalytic reaction because of the materials that comes out of there. But nonetheless, what it does is it gets really hot, and so you end up with a gasification kind of thing going on inside this deal. And so, with these GEET designs, or these GEET reactors on the exhaust system, they can actually feed basically trash. You can burn water and gas mix, or oil and gas. I've even actually seen people pour soda and all kinds of different stuff inside the deal to make the fuel all cruddy, but nonetheless, it's still able to burn that in that internal combustion engine. It's just about the basic concept of the gasification process for the wood gasifier. So anyway, I don't know if I posted the link to that page or not. Let me look down there and see if I did. Don't look like I did. So I'll go ahead and copy this. It's on has something or another. It's just one of many resources out there. Pezin.com? I don't know. Either way, I'll post that link inside there. There's an article and talks about where you can actually buy some prototypes of this thing if they're still, doing it. But either way, if you look at how these are working and the concepts that you can actually take these to different levels, basically turning any doggone gasoline engine into something that will burn just about any fuel. And where I'm always butting heads with, doggone it, why does that always do that? Sometimes this doggone website seems to have a mind of its own, or it's difference between what type of antivirus program you got running, and it doesn't want to allow you to post things. That's frustrating. There, see, now me there. I'm trying to
look like I did.
Stop that doggone thing. That's what I told you, folks. Duct tape and baling wire. Ain't no joke. That's the way it's going down. See, I pasted on there. All right, well, Dad burn it. Somebody copy that link from TCT chat room and paste it in the other chat rooms. All right, well, anyway, with this particular design, induction heating gasification deal there, now it ain't even letting me click on that. I'm trying to get back to the picture. Anyway, basically, you could use it as a refinery to refine old cruddy fuel or even old, any petroleum products like transmission fluid and old dirty motor oil. You could turn it back into a usable product again. And also, there's ways of actually recycling old motor oil. You know, most people get frustrated because they want to get completely away from the carbon-based internal combustion engine fuels, which they call fossil fuels, and everybody seems to want to blame for so-called global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math doesn't add up. And so when I tell them, I said, you could run a car on pure distilled water. Well, that's when the idiocy begins. That's when the complete and utter misunderstanding of the so-called laws of thermodynamics gets spewed out like some sort of parrot, you know, repeating Polly won a cracker. And it drives me nuts. Because, see, when you're running an internal combustion engine and you're running one that, you know, is set up to run on diesel fuel, and then you've got one that you've got set up run on propane or, you know, regular gasoline or whatever. Those engines were specifically designed for that type of fuel. And so with that said, they're not really meant to be driving around using other types of fuel. You can run hydrogen in a regular internal combustion engine. And you can run biofuels such as vegetable oil in diesel engines. And there are certain things that you could actually, you know, modify. You could run them on wood gas. But they weren't specifically designed for that particular fuel. And so with that said, they don't have an understanding of how to use water as a fuel without the electrolysis process, and they all always come back to the same doggone thing. Well, it takes too much amperage to use the electrolysis process, and you can't get out enough fuel on demand, and so on and so forth. Which is, it's ridiculous that they'd even say that, because Stan Myers was driving around in a dune buggy in 1970s that was running on hydrogen technology, and he was doing it on demand. But nonetheless, the industry and the educated idiots of the world want you to believe that it's not possible. And, you know, that's the kind of ball and chain that the alternative energy's been up against ever since the alternative energy free energy and so on and so forth come into play, was that these folks want to try to tell you why something isn't possible. And even in the alternative energy community, you still got people that cling to the school books as if it was the gospel, and it's not. The laws of physics aren't written in stone, and even if you do not want to defy the laws of physics, even if you don't believe that you can defy the laws of physics, you can still utilize those laws of physics to your advantage and be able to get work done. That's what I've been saying all along. And so we know what happens when we boil water. We know what pressures is created when water is turned into steam. we know all the different reactions of adding heat to water. And so, in that case, we're using physics to transfer energy from, let's say, fire or electrical, whatever, any heat source. You know, the nuclear power industry uses depleting uranium, you know, the highly charged particles crammed into ceramic rods that, you know, as they're falling apart, essentially are releasing energy, which is interacting with the dipole molecule that is water, and rocks the water molecule, causes it to develop friction, which in turn develops heat and boils your water into steam. And so all you're doing is putting a heat source to the water and boiling it. With that said, if you design an engine to specifically use what is the reaction that you know what's going to go on whenever you put heat to water, then you know how to design that engine to do the work that you want it to do. We've been running steam turbines since way back in the 1800s that are running, you know, they throw firewood up into the burner, which hits a big boiler, and that steam pressure builds up, and they use it to push pistons, which in turn pushes a heavy train down the road, and it's been done for years. And in the modern day ones, they got, steam, the modern ones are gasoline hybrid electrics, or diesel electrics, either way, but nonetheless, in like the old boilers that they used in old Navy ships, they had steam turbines that turned big motors, that turned generators and such, that turned all kinds of stuff, and it was all steam power, steam pressure. And so there ain't no reason why you couldn't use modern day technology such as induction heating to heat the water up. You know, whatever's inside that coil is going to get hot. Any ferromagnetic metal or whatever inside that, if it's conducted, when it gets inside there and produces the eddy currents, you can melt steel inside there. That's how hot it gets. And if you look at the design in this picture that I'm talking about, it's made with copper tubing. And in order to make this thing yet even more efficient, if you put some sort of insulator over the copper tubing, and then you use some Litz wire to basically give it more surface area and reduce the amount of resistance that you're going to get, you still get an efficient electromagnetic field inside without generating near as much heat. Now, if you go out there on eBay and you look up ZVS driver board, high voltage generator driven by induction heating circuit, this is not only a high voltage generator that you can use for other projects like plasma reactors, or even pulsing Tesla coils, or and this one here specifically for low voltage input that you can do induction heating with. The input voltage, according to the specs on the one particular one that I looked up, the ZVS driver that I looked up on eBay, is 12 volts to 30 volts. 12 volts, is greater than 5 amps draw on it, and 15 volts is greater than 10 amps draw on it. Well, that's just the one coil, but if you actually modified that coil to put some, more surface area to that coil, using like Litz wire or something like that, something that you can find in the back of old TVs or even ordered on eBay as well, and multi strands that basically will hold a lot of current, allow a lot of that energy to cut down the resistance, if you understand what I'm saying. But nonetheless, this one here is made out of copper tubing, which means that not only will you be heating on the inside of the coil, whatever metal you put inside there, or container you put inside there, which in my view, stainless steel is going to be the best one to use. So if you had stainless steel tubing, then you wouldn't even need the rod inside this picture, because you could actually heat whatever you want and gasify it just with the heat from the stainless steel tubing alone. But the copper tubing you circulate water through this copper tubing, and that will keep the heat down on that to basically make it even yet more efficient. And then you can use that for a hot water source on the other side. So, you know, if you use the copper tubing and maybe some stainless steel or stainless steel tubing or whatever, copper tubing probably be the best as far as conducting electricity, but nonetheless you can still do the same process with any metal. It's just like if you take a steel pipe and lay it across two batteries, you know, that pipe's going to get really hot because it's a dead short on the doggone battery. And either way, we're talking about taking two separate designs. One would be a gasification and the other one would be induction heating, and now we're able to turn basically trash into fuel again. So we talked about if you can run a car on water, and the majority of the educated idiots out there that choose to live in ignorance will tell you, well, you can't run an internal combustion engine on water for this reason and that reason, and even the doggone Mythbusters jumped on bandwagon and made complete and utter fools and lost one of their fans because of their shenanigans. They knew that you could run a car on hydrogen. I mean, there's people out there running cars on hydrogen technology, even though that technology is actually out there available on the market. If you got the money to buy it, they still reject it and say it's not feasible at this time or any time for as that goes, because they want to sell fuel. But anything can be used as fuel. If you took and specifically designed, which I showed, if you look up over here on the doggone podcast page, there are a couple pictures down there. I'll see if I can just post a link over there in the chat room. But there are some pictures down there that I called a focused heat engine. And that's essentially, this particular design would be a two-stroke, version single cylinder heat engine that would run on water. Let me see if I can get down there and find that picture, and I'll copy the link and then I'll share it in the chat room down there. But either way, basically what you would have going on is you would literally be running an engine as an air compressor first. You'd have an electric motor, which is essentially a starter generator like they used to use in old tractors. Yeah, let's see, there's several pictures on there. If you jump on the doggone podcast page, you'll see it down there. I'll just get one of them out of there. There's several pictures, but I just copy one of the links and put it on there. Let me see. I'll just get this one right here. This is bad for radio. Hydro heat engine, that's the one I'll copy. And keep in mind, this is just a crude design. Just to get the brains to moving, that's the whole thing. A lot of these pictures that I post out there are essentially idea pictures. You know, give people ideas to work with. And so, I'm going to post that over here in all the chat rooms, doing it as we speak, as long as I can get these doggone computers to do what they're supposed to. Alright, there we go. Folks listening in, if you jump over there to shazizradio.com in the superchat.html, you'll have access to all these links. Otherwise, just try to YouTube them or Google them. Anyway, this is essentially a fuel that would run on water. And the way that it is set up is that it uses induction heating. If you're looking at the picture, you'll see that there's coils that goes around the cylinder. This one would be a direct injection to when it's a two-stroke, so it'd be a direct injection. So when you atomized and then vaporized the fuel, By the time the water gets out of the storage tank, it goes around inside the induction heater, and it's actually heated up with the heat transfer between the cylinder and the walls of the coils themselves. And then it gets up to an atomizer, which breaks the fuel down a little bit more. And then it gets down to a vaporizer, which breaks it down yet even more. And then on the upstroke of the piston, it would inject small quantities into a superheated cylinder that would in turn instantaneously flash that water into steam, forcing that piston down, and so on. And so essentially, you'd use the induction heater to bring it up to around about 300 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, and you could even make it out of aluminum as long as you never reached the melting point of the actual aluminum itself. You know, you could still get it to flash the steam. I did a video quite some time back where I took a little weed eater motor and I was getting it hot and then injecting small bits of water in there. And you could see in the video where this thing, it was bucking. It was trying to start from that flash of steam that when it got hot. And the problem that was having was that I was putting too much in there, which caused the cylinder to cool back down. And you need it to be hot enough inside that cylinder at all times so that whenever you inject your fuel inside there, which is the water, then it would instantaneously flash the steam and force the piston down. So if this was designed properly, you'd keep the with the induction heater, you'd keep the cylinder temperature up above 300 degrees Fahrenheit at all times, and everything else on the outside would be insulated. You'd keep that energy focused into where you want it, and even the exhaust heat could be basically reused to keep the temperature of the water preheated, so you're actually bringing the water temperature up to maybe right even before boiling point, before it actually goes through the entire system. So you're keeping that heat as long as you can until you finally get it up there and you start breaking this water down and then vaporizing it, and then only sending in just the amount that you need to cause the reaction that you want, which essentially as soon as that that fine mist goes inside that super hot chamber, it instantaneously flashes into steam, which is about 1600 times its volume, whatever you put in there, and it'll force that piston down. See, we could even redesign the entire internal combustion engine to where you wouldn't even have to change your oil. See, the problem with internal combustion engines is the doggone ring system that's on there. When you're running these things, these rings are set up to, whenever that explosion's going on inside there, it actually causes these rings to press out and create a seal on the cylinder wall. But the problem is that even if you got two sets of rings, there's a split in those rings on both of them. And so carbon can work its way down through the piston and get down into the oil. That's what turns your oil black. And then you have to have an oil filter to filter all that carbon up out of there. Otherwise, the oil will become like sandpaper on the pistons and the bearings and stuff. It'll have grit to it, you know. You'll sit there and start sanding off the walls by the flow of the oil sliding back and forth through moving parts and stuff. But if the rings were redesigned to where they couldn't actually allow any carbon blow-by in those pistons, you'd never have to change your oil. Because there wouldn't be nothing to get dirty down in there. And if you didn't have to change your oil, see those metal parts right there, those don't come there from natural wear. Those come there because you got carbon down inside there that's actually tearing into the metals. And it causes little tiny metal flakes to form down inside there. And so some oil pans, if you take an oil pan off, you look, they'll have little magnets down there to catch the doggone metal flakes so that the metal flakes don't start tearing stuff up. So these engines were poorly engineered to begin with. You know, it could be a perfect design. You could actually get a perfect burn on a carbon-based, basically what they call fossil fuel engine, and you could take and re-engineer these things to be, you know, perfectly clean. Wouldn't have no carbon emissions out. And it would grab up any potential waste products or heats on the way out and reuse it. Maximum efficiency, that's what we're talking about. And so, if you took all these concepts right here, and you looked at actual specs of what that doggone induction heating circuit, also known as a ZVS driver board, input voltage, once again, 12 volts to 30 volts. That's this specific circuit. You could redesign them to be whatever volt range you want. You could actually put them down to really super small voltages if you want. It just depends on how hard you want to work this thing. And, you know, the 12 volt one, it says it's greater than 5 amp draw on it. And the 15 volt, it says it's greater than a 10 amp draw on it. The operation frequency is 30 kilohertz to 50 kilohertz adaptive. And says it'll shoot an arc 1.5 centimeters. So that's pretty high voltage, high frequency. And so this one little deal right here, which you can buy them anywhere from $10 and up, depending on how high tech you want to get with one, and do a lot of experiments with it. But this particular circuit board can not only energize any of the noble gases into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, which is another heat and light source, and you could use the same doggone thing to pulse Tesla coils to get wireless energy transfer. You can use the same circuit for using induction heating, low voltage input, low current, whatever, and basically make a really a super efficient heating system. So there's all kinds of possibilities. You take all these things in consideration, and you basically take, if you're going to build your engine that run on water, you would use the induction heating system, just like in the picture that I posted down there. The induction heating system is there for the purpose of maintaining the temperature in that engine. Now here's the thing that I want to point out. This induction heating coil that's in this particular picture, it's not going to be running full time. It's going to have a thermostat on the side of this thing that will turn the circuit on and off, just like your regular heater would, when the temperature gets up to whatever you predetermine is going to be the best running temperature. And on top of that, the engine itself, because it has a piston, is basically using compressor technology. And as we know, if you compress air, then it gets hot, just like running a regular air compressor. So if this thing had a starter generator connected to it, it would literally turn the deal like a compressor, generate heat that would in turn, you know, add to the system. So while this thing's running, you're using what would have normally been the waste heat, 4+, to keep the inside of that cylinder hot enough so that whenever you inject small quantities of vaporized water inside there, once that small quantities of vaporized water hit the cylinders, it would instantaneously flash into steam, and the steam pressure would push the piston down and run the engine. So that's how you could specifically run a car on water, you know? And I'm going to give Steve a call here and see if he's got a good connection. So anyway, the possibilities are limited only to your imagination. If you want to literally make an engine that would run on, you know, pure distilled water with no additives. And if this engine was done properly, you could redesign the ring system on there to where the rings wouldn't even necessarily have to be metal. You could actually use some sort of, fibrous material that, you know, would be good for heat, you know, wouldn't break down under the heat. But nonetheless, it would make a clean seal if you think back about the old days of how they actually made hand pumps, and they had a seal that would actually, you know, force pressure down and then suck water up. If you did that same process in there, then this doggone piston would never even tear into the cylinder wall, and it would never allow anything to get past the piston itself. And so, if you were using oil in this system, you'd never have to change it. There would be absolutely no reason to change your oil. The only reason why we change our oil today, obviously, is because the way that the ring system in the internal combustion system is set up is that it allows carbon blow by, and that is what turns your oil black. And that's why you have to have an oil filter and an oil change every so often. But if they redesign those, just the rings alone in the internal combustion engine, you'd never have to have an oil change. Now, if I'm smart enough to figure this out, I'm sure that the industry out there knows as well that you could do the same thing. But they don't want to make that improvement, otherwise they're not going to sell as much oil. It's as simple as that, folks. Hi, Steve. How you doing, brother?
Hey, Shazin. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Talking about induction heating and inefficiency and stuff, man.
Yeah, I was listening in there. I'm very interested in induction heating because I want to bend bamboo.
Well, there's on eBay, those doggone induction heater circuits are pretty doggone cheap these days, man. They call them ZVS drivers as well because they use them for like running flyback transformers and stuff. You know, like you have in your TV sets, and they put out a high voltage, high frequency. But no,
mate, I live on Mars. There's no eBay here, and nobody will ship here.
Well, that stinks.
I have to pull it out of something scrap.
All right. Well, on a plus in that, then, if you click on some of them links, I put some links to actual diagrams that for induction heating circuits, and you could build your own circuit, and you know it's really not that. That hard to figure out. They're really simple circuits, but
it is.
Yeah.
Don't forget, I've got two very friendly electrical engineering professors.
Well, cool. Then take that, copy one of these schematics to them, show them a picture of what it is that you're wanting to build, and they'd be able to do that for you. And my advice is that so that you can get a 2-for-1 deal out of this thing, is use copper tubing when you do that so that you can actually circulate water through there and get hot water in the same time while you're actually using that. Because when you're using that induction heater, it actually generates heat back to the coil. It's all, you know, all this is happening internally, but it does transfer heat back to the coil, which you want to try to keep that cool anyway so that your circuit would last longer. But if you did this like Maker J101 was using Litz wire, which is a multi-strand wire like you find in the back of TV sets and stuff, for like degaussing or something like that. I can't remember gaussing. I have to ask Muddy what they call that. Anyway, but either way, it gave more surface area to this coil so that you wouldn't be drawing as much, you know, resistance, and it would keep the thing a lot cooler and be more efficient. So Even these designs right here could be improved upon. See what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And most of which you could actually recycle out of different, you know, junk deals down there. You can get copper tubing out of old refrigerators that have gone bad, or even air conditioners, that you could use that copper tubing out of there. And as far as the transistors or MOSFETs or resistors, any of those, there's so many different things there. Everything ranging from TVs to radios to amplifiers to doggone it, there's just a bunch of them out there where you can get recycle those parts. You know, desolder them and recycle them in, and they all got numbers on there. And you can jump on Google and Google up. Well, if you got access to electrical people, they'll know what the heck. Electronics guys, they'll know what those numbers mean. Real simple stuff.
Well, I wanted to call in and just say there's some good news.
Yeah? I like good news.
Well, how many years have we been talking about trying to find ways to do things with junk, basically. You know, you don't have to go out and buy it. You can recycle it. You can take it out of old parts and convert it to something useful.
Yeah.
Well, I've been given permission to build a workshop.
Cool.
You know, it doesn't cost me any rent at all. All I've got to do, put some tools in there, teach the local people a whole bunch of mad science.
Well, then, you know, you came to the right place, brother, because just we can do a network kind of thing where maybe you actually get on Skype and show them some different types of, you know, things that we've been sharing with people all these years. There's all kinds of different coil geometry just with that induction heating that you could use as well for everything from heating things from the inside or, you know, cooking. There's all kinds of... You could take that same circuit that you're going to build or have somebody build for you, and you can make it a multi-purpose heating source. You see what I'm saying here?
Well, having a hot shower is a luxury, yeah.
Well, this will do it for you because induction heating is essentially the way that those doggone tankless water heaters work.
Well, one of my concerns is I'm pretty much got to set everything up on solar power. If you're going to use a 2 to 3 kilowatt element to heat water, that's an abuse of power.
Yeah. Well, using these circuits that I was talking about, you could do for less is what I'm saying. That ZVS driver, the voltage on that is 12 volts to 30 volts, and it says it at 12 volts it used greater than 5 amps, which, you know, that's not going to be that much more. 5 amps ain't that hard to come up with.
Part of the problem is you can have a battery bank that works 12, 24, or 48 volts.
Yeah.
You know, 12 volt is kind of the easiest to work with. It uses less wiring. You use thinner gauge wire because you're not transferring much power.
Yep.
48 is probably more efficient, but at the end of the day, how much are you going to get from the sun?
Well...
So the kind of 2-3 kilowatt element heating system is okay. And it enriches the electricity companies, but... There's got to be better ways to do it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This induction heating is an alternative to using the other styled elements. And if you could actually pull... I got some of them that I pulled out of microwaves. There are little temperature units in there. So if you want to only have this thing on for a brief amount of time, and when it reaches a certain temperature that it will shut itself off, these are already ready to go. And so even the protective devices necessary to build the heat source that we're talking about, they're already, you could scrap them out of old microwave ovens. You guys got any of them laying out in the dumps anywhere?
Thousands.
Well, then you got not only access to magnets, but magnetrons, and you could actually take and remodify one of those microwave ovens to literally run off of a 12 volt power source, because the key to the microwave that's being created inside there is, first off, the microwave magnetron is like a light bulb, and so when you heat that element up and then you hit it with high voltage charge, that high voltage, high frequency charge is actually what causes it to release the electrons inside that that chamber there that creates the microwave. So you don't have to have a power source such as what you got going on there. You can completely bypass the microwave magnetron and still be able to produce enough energy to run that doggone what the heck did I just say the name of the magnetron? You can run the magnetron on less energy than what they do. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, my current interest is building a steam chamber. You know, I'll get some probably 4-inch steel pipe, put a good cap on each end, pump it full of steam, heat bamboo.
Yeah.
Then I can start making plant pots.
Well?
They've got very, maybe about half an inch thick bamboo here called tigbao.
Yeah?
And it grows everywhere. It's a natural resource that's very easy to get, but you need to be able to bend it. The best way to do that is to steam treat it. First of all, it kills all the termites that live in it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't get eaten from the inside only. And, you know, we can make a lot of stuff.
All right. So if you're going to do, if you're going to go with the induction style like what I'm talking about, then the instead of getting regular steel, get you stainless steel, because for some reason stainless steel works the best inside here. I mean, it's almost instantaneous that stainless steel will get hot. And you can bring it up to over the boiling temperature instantaneously. And then, okay, let me see if I can explain this to you simple. You got an induction heater, and you're wanting to produce steam. So you got your induction coil, and you run a stainless pipe through there. If you have something that you can take and send a really fine mist of water inside that pipe and then guide that steam to wherever you want it to go to do your bending, really simple design. And so as soon as...
Well, I'm talking...
Huh?
I'm talking about maybe a 3 meter length of pipe.
Yeah. It don't matter.
How are we going to make that in?
You can make it as long as you want. You can make that coil as long as you want.
See, what I'm doing, Chiz, is I'm working on a livelihood program to give people skills.
Yeah?
A lot of people here have had very little education. Maybe they made third, fourth grade, and then they went to work.
Well...
So this is our big opportunity. For all these years we've been talking about this stuff, to put it into practice.
Is there, and when you get to build your shop, is there going to be a capability of me being able to Skype in with video and help you out, sharing some ideas? Still there? Doggone it, I think we lost him. We'll just hang on until he gets back. But anyway, that's... That's one of the benefits of what we're doing here is that, you know, if we want to do, not all of us can travel everywhere in the world. I mean, I'd love to be able to go all over and just help people out doing mad science. Try this again. Are you there?
Talk about irony, Shizzles. Well... Yeah, the internet here isn't great, but we can try and do our best.
Yeah, well, if there's a possibility, or even if there's a subject that you need to do or whatever, I wouldn't mind making a video specifically for whatever subject might help you out and make it as detailed as possible.
I would appreciate that, Shizzis.
Well, you just let me know if you got one that you really need a good video on, and I'll work it up for you. So,
well, I'm more than happy to try anything once.
Well, I think that...
But if I shock the crap out of myself, I'm not going to try it twice.
Yeah, well, I'll show you all the precautions while I'm doing that. Anyway, this induction heating thing is a really important deal because it opens up a whole lot of different... avenues as far as where you could go with energy. You know, heat has probably been one of the most obnoxious, I guess you'd say, forces of nature when it comes down to, you know, running electronics or even your engine in your car. You know, you always got to worry about heat because these things are putting out so much energy that they're all generating a lot of waste of heat, and that heat is powerful energy. You're not going to get too much more power than heat. And, you know, electricity has the capability of literally generating heat. High voltage, high frequency, same thing. You could energize gas in a plasma and get heat, or you can use the arc direct to get heat. There's so many different possibilities, and it's just unlimited. It's only limited by, you know, a person's imagination where you want to go with it.
Well, Shazuz, I have the advantage of getting a head start on that. I recorded temperatures outside my house in June of 48.2 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
So now, if I can use some sort of mechanism to transfer that heat to electricity, I'm way ahead of the crowd.
Well, that's a pretty easy one right there, because you can literally build a solar heating system that would not only store heat underground, where you actually have a bank of heat. All right, it's kind of like, I know you've heard me say this before, it's kind of like the old concept of the old car tire sitting in the back of the pickup truck all day, and then it gets dark outside and you go sit down on that tire and it's absorbed heat during the entire day and it'd burn your biscuits. Well, we know that there are certain materials that retain heat a lot longer, and there are certain methods by which you could actually, like the old thermoses, for example. You know, you've got those old thermoses that have a glass insulator inside there, and you put your coffee in there, and your coffee will stay hot all day long. And so, taking everything that we've just talked about in consideration, you could even take old car tires, grind them down into little chunks, and use that, those little chunks, inside a closed system that's insulated, buried under the ground, that once you've got those things hot, they would retain that heat. You see what I mean? And so,
well, just out of interest, is this, we're actually looking for insulation at the minute, and do you know what we came up with?
What'd you come up with?
Rice hull.
Well, that sounds like it'd be a good one.
We've got a steel frame building that was built before I even got here, that they haven't done much with, and it's got plyboard on the inside. We're going to line the outside with bamboo to make it look pretty.
Yeah.
But to maintain the temperature inside, we're using rice hulls.
Cool.
I mean, I live in Asia. Rice hulls, they throw it away. They'll pay me to take it away. I can have tons of the stuff if I want. But rice hulls are a grade A insulation material.
Well, what if I told you that you could also turn them rice hulls into fuel?
Okay.
Well, that same process of induction heating, I'll post the picture link. Can you get pictures on your system there?
Yeah, I'm on Skype.
Okay, I'm going to post it into the Skype for you, and give you a little short explanation of what you're seeing there. Alright, let me know when you got the picture in front of you.
I got it.
Alright, so essentially what this is an induction heating gasification unit. Basically, it has a chamber which preferably would be stainless steel. I just made this like a cutaway view as far as the chamber inside there, and it also has a metal rod in there. The metal rod isn't necessary.
Is that GI steel, or is it stainless steel, or is it 316, or is it 306?
Well, just regular stainless steel would be fine. I guess the more quality stainless you got, the better you get. Either way, it's going to get hot. And it's going to get really hot and really fast. And so the way a gasifier works is you got a chamber and you put like wood chips or any carbon-based like grass clippings or whatever inside there, and it heats the tank from the outside, which causes the gasification of that material inside there. And you'll see like smoke come out the other end of it, and that's flammable. That's how the old wood gasifiers work. And you run that smoke that's coming up out of the chamber down through a bubbler, so it'll clean the system, clean the gas up, and then you can actually run that gas right directly into an internal combustion engine. It'll burn. That's what they used to do back in World War I and World War II when they were running low on fuel. They would use wood gasifiers to gasify wood chips and basically run the Jeeps and stuff.
It sure is.
Yeah.
Have you seen the YouTube videos of the boys in Norway that are using wood gasification fuel sources to run the cars?
I don't know if I actually seen the links you're talking about, but yeah, I've seen people that have been doing this. And this unit right here, because it's induction, it means that you don't have to have an outside fuel source like wood or whatever to burn to heat the chamber. This is actually going to use induction heating to heat the chamber that you're going to gasify whatever you want.
Well, in fairness, these boys have got a huge, great, big steel boiler pot mounted behind the camp.
Yeah?
On a pickup truck. And they're pumping the gas directly into the engine and running the cars on it.
Yeah. Well, if you took this system right here, you could build it small enough to fit underneath the hood. It'd have its own bubbler system to clean the gas as it comes through the deal. And you could gasify any material that you put through there, just like the Geet engine did, or the Geet reactor did. And you would be able to turn any trash into fuel on demand with this system right here, and make it small enough it could literally fit under the hood of a car.
So it's kind of like Doc Brown sticking bananas and Coke cans into the back of his reactor.
Yeah, pretty much the same thing.
Get back to the future.
Pretty much the same thing.
That would be cool, wouldn't it?
You could get that to work. You could take the garbage from restaurants and build a chamber that would literally hold that garbage and gasify that garbage into literal fuel. Anything that's carbon-based, you can gasify. That's the whole thing. And I don't understand why people don't understand the simplicity of what this does. It causes heat.
Well,
it gets the stuff hot enough to where it doesn't catch fire. It doesn't ignite. And it basically turns it into gas.
Well, calm yourself down to a frenzy there, Shaziz. Don't forget, the dictionary definition of a human being is a carbon-based bipedal life form.
Well, don't be so using don't be giving, people for fuel.
Don't be giving them ideas. Yeah, don't be giving them ideas.
But either way, this is something that is so ridiculously simple that would save an incredible amount of fuel. And if you're going to build an engine that you want to run on water, you just gotta, you know, do a few modifications. You could actually modify an existing internal combustion engine to run on hydrogen technology. But to do it in the method that I'm talking about, you'd have to do a few more steps before you could actually get it. But this right here would take that water, and it would basically flash it into steam, and then you could use that steam pressure to atomize the fuel and the water. And then by the time that it was already atomized and pressurized, it would actually go through a vaporization system, which would still maintain that pressure, but vaporize that water. By the time it hit the cylinder of an internal combustion engine, it'd already be primed and ready to go.
When I was playing with hydrogen all those years ago, one of the problems wasn't producing it, but producing enough pressure to keep the engine running.
Yeah, well, this method would give you that pressure. That's
the
thing.
We gotta do that, mate.
And it's really, like I said...
Is that specific to a diesel or a petrol engine, or does it matter?
No, you could use it for any one of them. You could use it for a propane, butane, or diesel, or gasoline. It's just whatever fuel you're going to run through there that was specific. If you want your diesel to be primed and vaporized before it ever even gets to the cylinder, so that you get the most complete burn out of that fuel, then this is the way to do it. Because if you ever go out there and look at any of these induction heating, it doesn't take very long at all before that material, that metal, is completely and utterly red hot, and to the point where it's actually white hot, and it's ready to melt. Well, you don't have to bring it up to melting point. All you got to do is know what temperature is going to be the best go for whatever fuel you want to use, and only bring it up to, like, for instance, my water engine would go to 300 degrees Fahrenheit, because water boils at 212 at sea level. And so if I want to bring it up to boiling temperature, I can get it to boiling temperature rapidly. And then if I want to take it a step over to where as soon as I inject my water into this chamber, it instantaneously superheats and flashes the steam and pressurizes that tube and then shoots it on down the line. You see what I'm saying? And that induction heater doesn't have to stay running constant. It only has to come up whenever the temperature drops below whatever you determine you want it to be.
Well, that has more applications as well, should it? I mean, back in the 80s, there was this phrase, cooking with gas.
Yeah.
Well, in the 21st century, we're cooking with trash.
Yeah. And that's what this thing would be. This thing would be capable of doing. This is just a small design, but if you wanted to literally make it where you had opening a hatch as big as the trash can lid, and all you do is dump your garbage down this thing and hit it with induction heating, and it turns it all that biological or trash waste into doggone gas, and then you turn that gas, it's already pressurized because it's already been heated, so it will pressurize your tanks for you and actually fill your storage tanks up like your propane tanks that you got. You could use the heat from this induction heating system to gasify it and then run it through a bubbler system, and then the pressure would go from that point into your storage tank, and you could get on-demand propane anywhere you wanted to go.
That would solve a lot of problems, believe me, mate.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's so ridiculously simple, and the energy input that's necessary, it isn't even nowhere near what people think it would have to be, because when I read out the specs, this little bitty ZVS driver board, I'll read it once again. The input voltage is 12 volts to 30 volts. This is what this particular circuit can handle. You can modify your own circuit and get you one that runs to whatever kind of input you got. If you got a 40 watt solar panel, then that ought to more than cover this particular circuit. So 40 watt solar panel, yeah.
Jesus, I have 8 250 watt solar panels.
Well, then you got enough power to do many of these. So if you wanted to build a gasification system that would pressurize tanks and store, different types of gas, whichever kind you want to make, inside a storage tank, and it's already pressurized and ready to go, you just modify whatever burner you're going to be using the fuel in, or run it directly into a generator, and then there you go. I mean,
she's I have another 22 on order for January.
Cool. Well,
what's that? That's 30 times 250 watts. On average, they produce about 210, 212 watts.
Yep. So, essentially what I've been saying, and you've been saying all along, Steve, is that we've already got the technology necessary to be energy independent, no matter where you live. I don't care if you live out in the deepest, darkest jungle. If you can find old scrap parts somewhere, you could get those parts and you could modify those parts. They got capacitors in old, just about every appliance out there got old capacitors in there that you could still use. As far as the tubing, you can recycle the copper tubing. I'm sure you could find stainless steel pipe in some of the old cooking machines, stuff like that. They're everything you need. I wish we had our version of you remember that show called Junkyard Wars, where they get a team,
yeah,
and they go in there and they decide what they're going to build, and they got to recycle all the stuff in the junkyard. Man, I tell you what, if we had the mad science team, we'd smoke them. I mean, we've been researching this stuff for so many years, and there's so many different capabilities. You remember the pop boat idea that I was trying to get everybody to jump on to?
Yeah.
Well, this induction heating right here could literally be the answer to how to get a full-size pop boat that would run off of a 12-volt car battery and be a solid-state boat engine. See, all it's going to do is when that copper gets hot, is going to cause a temperature change from the pipe to the water and cause that water to circulate and move that boat around. So with a 12-volt car battery, a ZVS driver, and some copper tubing, you could literally build an engine that would run off of solar power. You got a little charge controller on a 40-watt panel. that would run a ZVS driver and bring this thing up to temperature. When it got up to about 300 degrees, then it would instantaneously shut the circuit off, and then when the temperature dropped down below again, then it'd bring it back up, you know. It just maintained it as necessary.
Shiz is, I have access to a 30-seater boat.
Cool.
With a broken engine.
Well,
it's going nowhere at the minute.
That would be the perfect one to prove the concept. It's so easy to build a pop boat. With this coil system that I'm talking about, you get more surface area for the water to get. Once you get that water up to temperature, and all you'd have to have in between there. See, you could. This would be a two-for-one kind of deal, because you could use the heat from the copper tubing to push the boat, and if you put a stainless steel tubing in between this same copper tubing, and then run that down in there as well, you'd have a two-stage motor right there. And then all you'd have to have is that motor on some sort of swivel or jet ski nozzling to direct to whichever way you want to go. It'd be so ridiculously simple to build. It'd be mind-blowing.
Well, she says, you're an old Navy guy.
Yep.
What sort of speed do you think you're likely to get out of a pop-up engine? On a full-size boat. I mean, a big boat. 30-seater.
What sort of what?
What sort of speed? How many nautical knots do you think this could produce?
Oh, I honestly believe if it was properly engineered, you could rival a jet ski. Ain't no joke.
Yeah.
Because right now, we're just talking about one single coil. Imagine a multi-stage coil with a massive amount of surface area, which means if you got like a big, let's say you got a 2 or 3 inch pipe, and inside that 2 or 3 inch pipe, you have a whole bunch of little, eighth or quarter inch pipes that are coiled, that is made in this same coil, so you literally got a honeycomb core that runs all the way through this coil system, and that's made out of stainless. And then you got your induction heating tubing that runs around that, which also feeds into the system. So when you're running this thing, it's building up a massive amount of pressure. And anybody that knows anything about steam pressure, if water is going to superheat and boil into 1,600 times its volume, the steam boilers we were using back in the day were anywhere from 650 to 1,250 PSI. Imagine shooting that in the water behind your boat.
Yeah, but it just is. That's kind of hot water, isn't it?
Yeah, but as soon as it hits to that doggone water, it's going to instantaneously create a cooling effect, because it's just like when gas expands, when you compress a gas, it gets hot. Once it's allowed to expand rapidly, which would be exactly what was going on in the atmosphere, the moment it hit that cold water, it would instantaneously cause a cooling effect, and you'd probably even see pieces of ice on the outside of the doggone end of the nozzle.
Well, I really wouldn't fancy the guys in that ship that are running around having a go at whalers chasing me down in wooden boat with bamboo outriders on it. That wouldn't be nice at all.
But either way, it's still scientific proven technology. Look, they use it.
Yeah, but do you really want to mess with the Sea Shepherd?
No.
No, let's do it right the first time.
Yeah. But either way, you know, I initially thought, because you're generating all this doggone heat, that, you know, you cause the water to get hot in whatever you're running around in. But that's not the case, because, you know, just like heating and cooling, like I said, when you compress a gas, it gets hot. When you allow it to expand rapidly, which was as soon as that gas pressure hits the doggone cold water, it's going to instantaneously cause the opposite effect, which is cooling it down.
Well, in fairness, I can go for a swim in waters that are 25 degrees Celsius.
Yeah?
That's nice.
But
I was born in England. When we went to the beach, we wear a diving suit.
Man, I couldn't dive in that water. I'd be instantaneously hypothermic.
Well, in fairness, Alaska's got much colder temperatures, but believe me, when you go to the beach in the southeast of England, it's not nice when you get up to the waist.
Well, I bet. But nonetheless, in those kind of type of conditions, really cold water, this would work even better. The colder the water was outside, the better this would work, because you got a definite heat difference. And here's another plus about the thing, is that you're also talking about thermoelectrics being caused as well, because if you got these two dissimilar metals in contact with each other at one end, and then they're being cooled down at the other end, thermoelectricity begins to fail when both sides become the same temperature. But if both sides can never become the same temperature, you'll be generating electricity between the stainless and the copper. So you could take that electricity that you're generating, the thermoelectric reaction that you get from these two dissimilar metals, and actually put it back into the battery. So you got your onboard generator.
Now that'd be interesting to try, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's how a thermocouple works. But the only reason why thermocouples aren't as efficient is because the thermoelectric, when like inside your pilot light of your deal, it's on all day long, so it allows both of those metals at some point to get to the exact same temperature. They can reduce it with some of the materials that they use in the process, but at some point it's going to reach the same temperature, and it's both sides of the metal will reach the same temperature, so it reduces the thermal reaction, and so then that's why they're only able to put out so much voltage. And yeah, you can go ahead and do that, Steve.
Give me a second, mate. I'm not running away. I'm just running somewhere.
All right. So anyway, if people wanted to literally build a solid state boat engine using induction technology and copper and stainless, you could literally design a solid state boat motor that would rival the jet ski. I'm telling you right now. Ain't no doubt in my mind, because all we're talking about is taking and utilizing that heat, utilizing pressure, utilizing the temperature difference between the water and the actual motor itself. And there's so many possibilities that you could add to the system, such as Peltier elements. You could have the bottom of this deal that would be heating up one side of a Peltier element, and then the temperature difference between the water that's underneath the boat from the hole of the bolt to the deal would be the equivalence of your heat sink. And so you could literally generate the power that you needed. Once you got this thing up to operating temperature, you could generate the power to run this boat from the Peltier elements and the thermal reaction that you're actually getting between the two dissimilar metals. See, it ain't that we don't have the technology to do these things, it's that they're not properly engineered. People, they don't seem to understand. Water is fuel. Everything's fuel. Energy is free. And for those folks that just want to be ridiculous and argue the laws of thermodynamics, I need you to go back and read the laws of thermodynamics and understand what their purpose was. The laws of thermodynamics have absolutely nothing, and I repeat, nothing to do with free energy. They only there to literally say that you can't get out more energy than you put in. You can't, in a closed loop system, get something to start under its own power, continue to produce enough power to keep the thing running constantly, aka perpetual motion. Over unity or 0 point. That's what the laws of thermodynamics argues against. Other than that, there's portions of the laws of thermodynamics that could be useful, such as the fact that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Which is true. You burn firewood and you end up with more products. You end up with more fuel. And everything that you use gets recycled into the system. It doesn't matter what you did with it. If you think that you, just because you burnt something in the burn pile, that's gone, it's not. It just changed forms. It broke down all the molecules and put it into some different form. That's it. And it doesn't matter what you do to anything out there. You ain't going to get rid of it. It's recycled into the system. And know, if you're worried about emissions, then capture the emissions and use that for fuel as well. You know, CO2, think about it. Think about what CO2 is. CO2 is two oxygen atoms connected to one carbon atom. Carbon is fuel. Oxygen is what fuel needs in order to burn. You need three things for a burn. You need a fuel source, you need an ignition source, and you need oxygen for things to burn. And water, being the most stable molecule on the planet, is one of the most powerful and most destructive elements on the planet. Water can cut through steel under the right pressure. Water can boil and create steam, which turns turbines, which turns generator heads, that gives you electricity. And so, what I've been saying all along, and it just boggles my mind how people can't understand the simplicity of what I've been saying. Water, you can run an internal combustion engine on water. Pure distilled water. No additives. If you understand the physics of how water reacts under certain circumstances, like heat and cold and whatever, pressure, you know, you can use water as hydraulic fluid, for Pete's sake, because a liquid can't be compressed. So they use different types of boils for hydraulic fluid. The only reason why they don't use straight up water for hydraulic fluid is for obvious reasons. Wintertime, that water would freeze up and it would cause the doggone hydraulics not to want to function properly. But if you could keep that water warm, it functioned just as well as any of the other oils on there. Nonetheless. Which it is. Yeah.
Let's not forget, in World War II in England, particularly in the area that I was born in the southeast, most of the food was produced in the arable areas. There's certain areas you can't grow stuff, like mountains full of granite. But when they ran out of diesel, they were pumping water directly into the engines, the diesel engines, once they got hot enough to save fuel.
They were doing that in the 40s to try to get, like when an engine, an airplane engine, they needed a sudden burst of power, they would inject water into that engine. They could only do it for a few seconds because it was so powerful that they'd end up destroying the engine. Well, if it was able to be done in the 40s, why can't it be done today, man? And
Some of those diesel tractors that they were using in the 1940s pumping water into them are still around now.
Well, I believe it. I believe it. Because the farmers, they knew what the heck they were doing. You think a farmer would intentionally inject something into his tractor that was going to destroy his livelihood?
Oh, on top of that, they used to start it with a shotgun cartridge.
Yeah. All you needed was that pressure to start.
Yeah, a blank shotgun cartridge and a big hammer.
Yep.
That's mad science, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You know, but
I've always maintained, if you have a big enough hammer, you can do anything.
Yep. And we ain't, in all the time that we've been doing the Mad Science Show, we've never tried to tell people to defy the laws of physics. We told the people to literally use the laws of physics to their advantage. If you don't
know,
like what
happened... We might have said that the laws of physics are a hock of hooey.
Well, yeah, we said that too, especially about the thermodynamics. Those are a real hock of hooey, and everybody who likes to sit there and try to spew out the laws of thermodynamics when I'm talking free energy have absolutely no understanding of what those laws of physics were for. They wanted to be able to literally say that perpetual motion is not possible. A closed-loop system couldn't start itself, maintain itself, and so on and so forth. So they used the laws of thermodynamics and every bit of excuses why it is we couldn't do something, when in fact, you know, I don't care if there's an outside power source such as the sun. If I use the sun to charge batteries and I can get enough power to keep that thing running continuously 365 days a year, to me that's perpetual motion. I couldn't care less whether it meets the definition or terminology. That's all we're arguing over is terminology. Perpetual motion pretty much says it'll start itself, run itself, maintain itself. Well, even if it's got an outside power source, which would exclude it from being called perpetual motion, but nonetheless, if it's still running, then to me, that's perpetual motion, a.k.a. free energy.
Well, Shaziz, if you want to see evidence of perpetual motion where it starts itself, it runs itself, and maintains itself, go to Brussels.
Yeah?
It's called the European Union.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
They didn't ask anybody if they wanted it. They just did it.
Yep.
It started itself, it runs itself, and it maintains itself.
Well, and that's pretty much what all these doggone systems are doing out here. You could get a lot of free energy out of the doggone politicians over here in America alone.
Heat exchange mechanism over all of the parliaments or Knessets or whatever you want to call them, globally, we'd solve the energy crisis that they keep claiming it.
Yeah. Over and over and over and over again, we have proved free energy on this show. And, you know, it just drives me insane. You'd think that people would want to grab this and run off with it and then try it and test it. If for no other reason to come back and tell me I was stupid and it didn't work, you know? But it's easier to come out here and try to quote the school books to somebody and try to spew out the laws of thermodynamics than it is to actually test it. You know, the scientific method is that you get out there, you test it, you prove it or disprove it, you repeat the deal, repeat the test, and if it's repeatable and all that, then that's the scientific method. But they don't use the scientific method. They use Scientology to try to tell you that free energy isn't possible.
So even Tom Cruise doesn't like Scientology now, does he?
Well...
Oh, sorry.
I don't like Scientology either. You know, I want true science to come back to the table. The science that I was taught in school. That's why I'm so frustrated. That's why I call it mad science. Because don't tell me that, you know, these are the ways that things work. And then turn around and try to tell me that something else is working against what you just taught me that it works. Like global warming. You know, that makes me so mad because it's so ridiculously stupid. And the average Joe, because this guy's got a white coat on him and says he's a science guy, takes everything that he says to heart and say, oh, well, you know, Bill Nye, the science guy, he said, or Neil deGrasse Tyson, he said, well, neither one of those two are scientists. You know, Neil deGrasse Tyson, his is in theoretical, you know, looking at the stars kind of stuff, you know?
Well, when somebody concentrates so much on Uranus, you know they're full of it.
That's right. You know,
you're
going to sit there and tell me that you can look out into the sky with a telescope and you can see this little flashing light that's supposedly trillions of light years away. And from that little flashing light and any wobbles or different colors, that you're going to be able to tell me that there's this many planets around it and there must be this size and they got this type of material on them and they're probably habitable or whatever. You're going to tell me that from all this little looking at this little light in the sky, but you're going to sit there and say that free energy ain't possible? Dude.
Wow. They're always trying to distract us to get us to look at something else. And usually there's something else that they want us to look at is so prohibitively expensive. We can't.
Well, Bill Nye the Science Guy is the modern version of Bozo the Clown.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you, but I don't really want to put the guy down because I've never met him.
Well... he's got some really crazy views on stuff, and anybody who questions the mainstream science, he basically wants to try to make them out to be stupid.
Well, in fairness, I saw his interview with Tucker Carlson on Fox News. Tucker's okay. I mean, he's pretty fair that he's a right-wing conservative, but the difference is he actually asked him real questions.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good interview for Bill.
Because he can't answer them.
You've got all this entire community of people that are constantly patting themselves on the back, saying, oh yeah, we're part of this club where our friends have told us that we're smart. But We're still using fossil fuels.
Yeah, and we don't have to. That's the thing.
Well, why are you so smart? Is it because you're getting funding to do irrelevant experiments on, you know, save the malaria fly? Malaria mosquito. We can't develop this area because it might kill some frogs that haven't been there for 100 years.
Yeah, and I don't care about the mating habits of a snail. What the heck's that
As an organic guy, I'm very interested in making sure that you don't disrupt an ecosystem.
Well, yeah, and that's...
But if that ecosystem was wiped out 60 years ago because they pumped effluent from a carpet-making factory into the region, well, there's nothing to save.
Well, I'm saying to the world that we literally could use the technology available on the table already to literally work in perfect harmony with nature. And that's what all these folks have been saying this forever. Until we're going to die from global warming, our planet's going to get all messed up, and we're going to have all these bad storms and all that. First off, if you don't want the best of weather up, stop jacking with it. The science guys have been doing it for years, and they've been telling everybody that they haven't been doing it. They do it. You know? And so, you know, with that said, NASA even showed a video how they were running a rocket that they were supposedly going to use for a rocket ship to go to Mars. And it runs off of hydrogen, and it literally produces a cloud that in turn causes it to rain somewhere down the road. And within an hour of them running this thing for 50 some odd seconds or whatever, it turns around and it rains.
I'll put you on the spot now.
Yeah. I'm waiting.
Oh, dear.
Ah! Where'd you go?
What do you actually? It was an event for yours.
Huh?
I'm here. Oh dear.
You're breaking up real bad, brother. Try it again. Well, looks like he got to reset his call. Man, we're having a rough go with this internet. Are you back?
Hopefully.
Yeah, I hear you now. Okay, hurry up and put me on the spot.
I'll build a laboratory. Okay?
Yep.
Basic tools, chop saw, drill press, welding machine. I will pay for your flight to come and visit us.
Holy smokes.
You give me 2 weeks of your time. Okay?
Yeah.
And come and show me what I'm doing wrong.
Cool.
Because the last time you were in the Philippines, you were on a big old Navy warship, and all you got to do was to wave at the people.
Yeah, I'd love to see the Philippines again.
How about this time around? You come and visit, and you do what we've been talking about all these years.
Yeah, we could go through your scrap yards and point out everything needs. We could basically scavenge up parts and get everything set out.
Well, we've no disrespect to the Philippines, she says. Scrap yards tend to be under banana plants.
Dang, that stinks.
Yeah, bury your rubbish for the grandchildren to worry about. But saying that, there's plenty of scrap yards around. You know, there's plenty of people that will give you a deal, but you have to work on it.
Yeah.
They've got this thing called a long nose tax. If you got a big nose, you can afford to pay more.
Long nose.
Well,
I don't even
have a big nose. But there are a lot of people here that are looking for solutions. I don't have the skills to provide them with what they need. You do.
Well, I think that'd be an awesome
deal. Once I have my workshop built, I think it's a good idea. Come and pay me a visit. Just give me a few ideas of what I need to collect from the scrap yards. I will have a pile of junk 20 feet high by the time you get here.
Cool.
And don't forget the natural resources as well. I can drive up to the local mill and get as many rice elves as I want. They'll actually be happy for me to take it away for them.
Well, you know what? We could also show that mill how to turn that doggone them rice hulls in free energy for them as well.
They don't like being told what to do.
Well, I'm going to tell them. I mean, I says, if they're interested, show them.
And believe me, they're not. If their father didn't do it that way, their grandfather didn't do it that way, and their great-grandfather didn't do it that way, they're not interested.
Well, I guess then we'll just accept their trash and enjoy it.
just out of interest, the best welders in the Philippines are women, apparently.
Well, that's cool.
Now, I can't put persuade to that because I'm not a welder. But I was told that in some of the big construction projects, most of the welders are women because they've got the patience to do it.
Yeah. And there's probably some really good smooth welds as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. It's just a little bit of a local culture, if you want to believe that.
Well, but I have to know. We have to check out and find out if some of these women could weld some stainless steel pipe real good.
Hey, buddy. Yeah. The beer's cheap. It's 50 cents, well, less than that actually, it's 50 cents a euro, so in dollars that's probably about 40 cents a litre of fuel.
Sounds like a great adventure, man. So,
we can go anywhere and do anything you like. Come visit, give us some real solutions, and I will put it in place. I just need a little bit more help, because I'm not that smart.
Well, I think that between the two of us together there, I think we could really get it resolved, man.
You know, if
I think it sounds exciting to me.
Buddy, Raymond, a few others, you know, we would have such a great time. It would be hilarious.
Man, wouldn't that be awesome if we could get the all of us together at one time over there?
Mad Science International.
That would be amazing. That would be one heck of an adventure, man.
Well, Shaziz, I promise you this. Once my workshop is built, my man lab, man cave, we'll talk about when you're free, and I'll bring you over.
Cool.
I sold my house, so I can afford it.
Well,
I sold my house to give myself the funding to make it work here. And there's people that are very interested that have nothing.
Well, I would be more than happy to do that. That would be awesome. That would be an adventure of a lifetime, man. I always wanted to go back to visit the Philippines. I really enjoyed myself over there. Some nice people, man.
Do you know what? When I walked down the street in England, about 15 years ago, I was walking down the street, there was an old lady walking towards me, and I said, good morning, and she said, don't steal my wallet.
She said, don't steal her wallet?
Yeah, please don't hurt me.
Man.
I just said, good morning. You walk down the street, you drive down the road, and you say, good morning, and everybody smiles.
Yep.
It's a nation of smiles. Well, I couldn't say a nation because I haven't seen all of it. But particularly the area that I'm living in. If you're nice to people, they're nice. Now, they still might charge you three times the amount because you're white, but they do it nicely.
Well, nonetheless, if we can be a benefit to those people, it would be worth the trip.
Oh, I'd love to take you to see my friend, the guy that's got a solar-powered welding machine.
I'd like to see that. That sounds cool.
Yeah, that's a huge amount of raw power coming out of battery banks. He's got about 40 100-amp batteries all stacked up. The guy's an electrical engineer.
Well, see, and that's another thing, too, battery technology. Look. There's only one difference between a battery and a capacitor, and that is the dielectric or the doggone electrolyte in a battery. If you got the electrolyte in a battery, that is a chemical reaction that is storing power on different plates, positive and negative. And that pressure that is stored on those plates is power. Well, capacitors will store the same amount of power and as a battery. For example, and I probably already mentioned this, but I'll do it again. If you go look at my video series called Free Thinkers, there are batteries out there that have been running for, I can't even remember when the first video, I think it's been almost 2 years at least, that this thing has kept the light on for over 2 years. It's three charging circuits. It's still on to this very day. I'm going to wait till winter time when there's snow on the ground and go out there and videotape it again to show it's still working. And that those are all dead batteries that have been storing a charge. I've been using AC capacitors and DC capacitors and old dead batteries that have been used ever since. So the capacitor technology is so ridiculously simple to make a capacitor that it's mind-blowing. You know, two sheets of aluminum foil with one sheet of wax paper in between it, you have a capacitor. The wax paper is essentially the dielectric. And so the dielectric is essentially what each one of them has a different time where they'll break down. Like, obviously, glass would be the best dielectric because the energy won't break that down and be able to jump across from plate to plate the higher the voltage gets. Now, if you have, like, wax paper in between these two plates, when you raise the voltage up too high, it can literally burn right through the wax paper and jump over to the other plate and short itself out, and then the capacitor's no good anymore. Now it has a path to the other side. Well, as long as you keep that path from each other, then the only time that that thing can discharge is off your terminals whenever you make a connection to it. So there you go, man. Batteries and capacitors in conjunction with each other, you got a storage bank that you don't need to go out and buy electric batteries, lead acid batteries, in order to store energy. You can store energy on two metal plates with a dielectric in between there, aka a capacitor. Capacitors can be used as batteries. Yeah.
Isn't the problem with capacitors that they don't maintain the charge over long periods?
Oh, sure, they'll maintain a charge as long as they're, see, even with a battery will self-discharge itself because of the atmosphere that's in between the the poles, the positive and the negative terminals. There's actually atmosphere in there. And that energy that is pressurized on one side of the battery and on the opposite side of the battery, it can literally, it has a path to the other side, if you see what I'm saying here. All right, and the reason why it takes so long with atmosphere is because it's so low conductivity. If you energize that atmosphere in between there, like in plasma, then you make that path better. You see what I'm saying? Like you could literally shoot argon gas from a positive terminal to a negative terminal and give those electrons a path to make it to the other side and discharge that battery. So even a battery that's not even connected to anything will slowly discharge itself. Now a capacitor, because you can store more pressure across it, will discharge itself over time. But you can still use capacitors to hold a charge. Like, for example, a man took some the modern-day boost caps, put six of these in series with each other, and made a battery system for his car. He started up, ran an alternator just like he would have a normal battery in there, and then shut it off, and 3 days later came back and was able to start it back up on that system. So, if you want to keep them from discharging to cross to each other and the battery going down, then you ensure that there's no way that any path could be made, such as, you know, air blowing across the top of it. You know, dust particles or whatever. Well, those dust particles are banging into each other and producing an electrical path for those electrons. You see what I mean?
Well, she says, my problem is I can buy enough solar panels to produce 55 kilowatts a day.
Yeah?
But to buy batteries to store it, You can only use half the capacity of a lead acid battery. Joat batteries, lithium ion is probably a bit dangerous if you don't know what you're doing with it, because if you overcharge them, they explode. And I don't know how to do that. I'm still working on it. I'm still studying, but the problem is I can produce quite a lot of energy, but I can't store it.
Well, that's why capacitors would be really good, and as long as they're already connected to a load, they won't arc across rapidly. See, there's a difference between a battery and a capacitor is how fast that energy, because of the way it's pressurized, will jump across to the other side. If you like put a metal pipe across there, short it out. Yeah, with a battery, you don't have an instantaneous discharge because you still have the electrolyte inside there adding energy to those plates. So with a capacitor, it's just an instantaneous discharge. You ain't got nothing putting the energy back to the deal. The electrolyte between the plates in a battery, because of chemistry, is still adding to the charge, and that's why you don't get an instantaneous discharge. What you do get is a more amperage because of the fact that you have energy that's still coming in, and it's a constant. You put a metal pipe across these two terminals, and it's a constant discharge until that battery is completely flat. You see the difference?
Yeah.
It's like if I had a balloon, and I had a nozzle at one end of the balloon, and I opened up the other end of the balloon to let the pressure out. As long as I keep putting air pressure to the back of that balloon won't go flat. And depending on how fast it's discharging out the other side, even if I'm putting a lot of pressure in this side, eventually at some point it will finally go flat anyway and just be blowing through a flat balloon. But that's the way a battery works, and that's the reason why a battery's discharge is so dangerous and you could get an explosion, is because the chemistry is still putting electrons to the plates. Whereas in a capacitor, it's whatever energy is on those plates is instantaneously discharged across the deal. And so if you got, one plate, you got this much power, two plates, and so on down the line, and you can run all these capacitors in parallel just like you do with batteries, and you can store just as much energy on the capacitors as you can on the batteries, because they're actually working the same, with the exception is one of them doesn't have an internal chemistry going on.
Well, I'll tell you what, Shaz, is I'm just looking up flights from where you are to where I am that'll get you here for my birthday in April.
I gotta look on my side and find out what all it entails in getting a passport these days.
Oh, come on. You wanna do mad science, you go and do it where it needs to be done.
Well, I do wanna. I
you hear me? Give my creation fly!
Oh, crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, I can describe the ruckus, sir. It's called Mad Science. That's right, we're back. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to all the wonderful people posting links, and links are being posted by myself and other guests that come on the show and such. Folks, they want to say to you that you can't get something for nothing, so free energy isn't possible. Well, let's humor those folks for a bit and just say it like this. We don't want to get something for nothing. We want to take what we've already been given, all these gifts of everything that you see around you, and utilize it into its maximum efficiency, a.k.a. free energy. So, if you know what happens when you boil water, then you know what you can do with that water once you boil it. You can boil it to make you some tea or some coffee, or you can cook some corn in there, or whatever, you know. There's so many different uses for boiling water. We've been cooking with water for years. We've been taking and boiling water into the steam and using that steam pressure to pressure cook things, or to in the canning industry, whenever they can foods in jars, like mason jars and stuff, they'll can them and pressurize them and seal them up, and you could store food for long periods of time using water and steam. So all the things that we're talking about, they don't even defy any of the known laws of physics. They just use the known laws of physics to their advantage and use it for a purpose. And that's all we've been saying all along. As far as driving a car on water, if you want to specifically design an internal combustion engine to literally run on water. And see, here's the thing too. I could get in an argument about it being an internal combustion engine, because they would say, well, you know, it's not actually combusting, so it'd be a steam engine. Okay, so if that makes you happy, call it a steam engine. Nonetheless, using high voltage, high frequency, heat, pressure, everything from compression ignition to induction heating to all the different thermodynamics of the way that water reacts and when you break it down and all this kind of stuff, even all the way to water being a complete and utter liquid and using it for hydraulics to get work done in the same doggone engine. You know, nonetheless, if you know what water does under certain circumstances, you know how to not freeze it, you know how to freeze it, you know how to do all kinds of stuff. If you know everything about, HVAC and how to pressurize a gas, and then releasing the gas rapidly causes an opposite reaction, which essentially is cooling. So you went from hot to cold just like that. And so that's just using all the known science to its best ability, to its advantage. And so we could take everything that we've got from the sun, the wind, the earth, all the chemistry that we know, all the different types of materials, and take this and literally build perfectly engineered machines that would work in perfect harmony with nature and be affordable to the average Joe. See, the trick about trying to get mad science out there on the table is trying to figure out a way in which to, number one, get it past the knuckleheads that want to argue about, things that they don't really understand. And then, number two, get it past the industry that don't want to try to put it on the market because it might cut into their wallet, and just get it into the hands of the average Joe. That's what the Mad Science Show is all about, getting the information into the hands and the minds of the average Joe. If the average Joe's going to get anything done, then ain't nobody else out there going to be able to rely on any kind of representation around this world to get anything done. If you want this done, come here to Knights Rights Roundtable on Sundays and a Mad Science Show on Saturdays, and you'll hear the things that we talk about. The solutions are right there on the table. The technology is available. Induction heating is an amazing technology. It uses something that causes known effects like the eddy currents and when you produce that magnetic field. And if you actually look at a diagram of a magnetic flux lines of a magnetic field, you'll notice that there's a vortex. Well, in the inside of that vortex is literally pressure. Magnetic field producing pressure inside that field. And so that's why you're able to, when you put a piece of metal in between that coil, that pressure inside that vortex is producing eddy currents, which is producing heat through the material trying to resist that strong magnetic field, and it gets super hot. So now that we know this, we can take this doggone technology and we can use it to heat water or boil water or just turn water into flat out steam pressure that we could then in turn use to turn turbines and all kinds of things. There's so many different uses for water that it's mind-blowing. And the byproduct of what you get from doing all this is no carbon emissions that they're hollering about. I don't care about carbon emissions personally. CO2 is nothing more than fuel. You got carbon connected to two oxygen atoms, and like I said earlier on the show, in order to get a fire, you have to have a fuel source, you have to have an ignition source, and you have to have oxygen. So all you have to be able to do is know how to separate that CO2, and you can ignite that CO2 and you can burn it for fuel. So the ridiculousness that we have to go through to try to present all this information to the average Joe out there, and all the different roadblocks and stumbling blocks that they put before everybody in the educational system that will disallow anybody from making any advancement that could potentially go up against the mainstream oil industries, any of the coal industries, or even the electrical industries or whatever. Anything that has to do with fuel and energy, they don't want you knowing about. That's as simple as that. Otherwise, they would have taught everything that I've done said in school. It would have already been taught. And we wouldn't be having to listen to this crazy old global warming / climate change / climate disruption debate all these times while they're trying to rip people off and charge them a carbon tax. Poor people in Australia, man, they're paying an astronomical bill because of that stupid carbon emission stuff. And they're getting robbed. They're literally getting robbed. Folks, their government is literally stealing from them on bogus science. And that makes me mad. And it's not just in Australia. It's all over the world. And they're trying like heck to push it here in the United States. But they're up against people like myself right now. Because people like myself ain't buying it. We're not falling for the stupidity that, other people want to try to say, this is, we got to save the planet. Look, Mother Nature's more powerful than you will ever imagine. More powerful than you are ever going to be. My buddy Steve, who's on the air with us right now, he put a quote up at the top of this website as he was building it. He said, "Nature needs no improvement. Only the arrogance of man requires change." And I'll tell you what, those are words of wisdom and brilliance unlike, anything. That's why I love this guy. He's awesome. And so, with that said, if you want free energy, it's just a matter of which way you want to take it. There's so many different ways that we can build perfectly efficient machines that the average Joe could afford to run. You could store the sunlight, you could store the energy from the wind, you could store any type of energy, every single frequency known to man, and even those not known to man. If it's moving, it's storable energy, period. So, using the known laws of physics, using basic science, we have the capability right now to literally build the perfect machines. When people are ready to do so, we'll get together and do so. In the meantime, we're going to try to do some things like go over there to the Philippines and see if we can help these people out. Bring their standard of living up. And maybe from that point, maybe we'll go to somewhere else and help them do the same. Using the resources they have available to them. You know, that's how this is going to work. It's going to be the average Joe at a grassroots campaign. You get together with the people in your neighborhood. Somewhere in your neighborhood is somebody who's a really good welder. There's probably a really good electrician. There's probably a really good mechanic and carpenter and craftsmen's all over the place. And if you can find a good team, first question you want to ask them, you want to ask them if they believe that free energy is possible. And if they start quoting the laws of thermodynamics, say, sorry, brother, don't need your help. Head on down the road. You know, because they don't understand what the heck is going on. Now, if they got an open mind and they're willing to at least try something before they deny it, those are the ones you want on your team. You want the mad scientist on your team. You want the backyard engineer. You want the backyard inventor, the backyard mechanic, the guys and gals who have all this time, because they couldn't afford the perfect tools, modified things into two tools. They turned around, and if they had to re-engineer something to make it run, they figured out a way to get this thing to run without having to go out and buy a new part to do so. They figured out ways to repair parts, such as plastic parts, that probably would have cost them a lot of money, but they figured out a way to literally weld that plastic back together. Those are the folks you want on your team. And if you get the ones on your team that want to argue all the time and want to, you know, try to quote the school book to you, you can't do this, this is impossible. If they think they know more than you, then those aren't the ones you want on a team, because those are the ones that's going to disrupt your progress. And that's that. You want the mad science guys, the guys like Steve and myself that are willing to at least think and try before we deny. So, how you doing there, brother? You still there?
I just wanted to say that there's a particular project going on at the minute in the Philippines where they're trying to graft tomato plants onto eggplants.
Wow. What would that be called?
Well, the general concept is you get a lot of rain here. Eggplants can survive huge amounts of rainfall. Tomato plants don't do too well. But because they're of a similar genus and similar species,
yeah.
If you can graft a tomato plant onto an eggplant, the base of the eggplant can handle a lot of rainwater.
Cool.
Whereas the tomato plant will flourish. I mean, since we've been here, we've produced nearly 5,000 seeds from various different seeds that we got from America, from Thailand, from all over the world.
Yeah.
And we've been able to produce seeds that will produce seeds. They're not Terminator seeds. They're none of this Monsanto junk. You know, I don't want to have to go back to a company every year to buy seeds, because that's an offense in the eyes of God, in my personal opinion. Even being a Jedi, I can appreciate that, you know, somebody somewhere created this place. I don't prescribe to any particular ritual or version of events, and you know, I greatly respect people who have their own views. But when you design a plant that requires tons of chemicals to make it grow, and then it won't produce seeds in the next generation, we don't need that.
No, I know.
We talk about mad science. That's insane science.
Yep. And then it's just a control mechanism to force you to be their customer.
Yeah, I mean, who wants to be part of that?
Not
Do
me.
Do you really want to base your livelihood and how you create work and employment for your children when you're beholden to a bunch of psychopaths that think they're God?
Well, and that's the biggest problem that we've got. The people up there at the top, they believe themselves to be so educated, and they know better than you. And I'm saying, you know, they don't know better than you, and they don't, they have nothing on nature. Nature has provided us with the perfect foods and the perfect materials and perfect self-contained biosphere. Just like you said in your deal up there, nature needs no improvement, man. That's it.
Well, currently we're working with a convent
Yeah?
Is to give people with no skills skills.
Well, that's what they need.
I mean, myself and Mrs. Simply Steve, we've taught them how to make bread, pizza, Yorkshire puddings. I mean, I'm up there once a month giving cooking lessons to girls from the age of 6 to 16. We donated a laptop. The Mad Science Group, should it?
Yeah.
Donated a bunch of solar-powered lights, because they've got a really steep hill that leads down at the convent. And our contribution was 20 solar-powered lights. So if you go down there after dark, which is about 6 o'clock in the evening, you don't break your neck. I mean, you guys have donated as well. I mean, you've all contributed.
That's a definite plus, man.
Well, it's a very simple thing.
That's the whole thing, helping each other out and stuff like that, you know? This information, folks, this is valuable information. And if you ever interested in past or previous shows, look, all you got to do is go on one of these little chats and you can sit back there and you can scroll back through all the comments and links. There's a record out there. You've got to, if you look up in the top, you scroll all the way up to the top, it'll say previous 35 and you can click on that link and it'll bring you back 35 prior to that, and you can keep on doing that to infinity. That's how many different links are available on this site. Not to mention, Stephen Gibbons has been working on a resource page where he's got links to all kinds of alternative energy stuff. And we got so many podcasts on the Mad Science Show alone. There's some podcasts on the Knights of the Round Table. You could go back and listen to old shows and hear what we were saying back then. And there's pictures and diagrams that we post everywhere. We share links over to different networks, such as Mark Brasher over at Zero Fossil Fuels and Russ at RWG Research and, you know, so many more. Rich Planet Energy Research Project, TeslaMaker.com, you know, and we'll even post your links on there. If you're out there trying to do something nice for folks and trying to get the, you know, world to be a better place, you know, video links and everything under the sun, information, that's what it's all about, sharing this information with people. And, you know, I don't know what more we can do than what we've already done. We have shared and shared and shared our ideas and information and other people's information. We've talked about people's YouTube channels. Hopefully some of you went over and subscribed to those YouTube channels and, you know, supported those individuals doing research. You know, Sky Collection, he's one of my favorite researchers out there, even though I don't understand a word he's saying. Maybe about pick out a few words that he's saying, but for the most part, he's speaking a foreign language to me, but I understand because I can understand what he's doing, and when I see him doing his work with pancake coils and different types of pulse circuits and stuff like that. And if anybody in this world ever stumbles onto a provable free energy or / over unity device, it's going to be this guy right here, because the amount of light that he gets out for the least amount of input is just impressive. And the RPMs on his machine that he's working on, it's incredible. And he designs his own coils, he puts his own parts together, and he shares it with everybody out there. And so for his research and his effort, please go over and support him. His name's Sky Collection on YouTube there. And there's a link in the all three of the video chats that I posted of his video. And, you know, tell him old Shaziz sent you over there to say hi. You know, that would be beneficial. I always try to put nice comments on his deal, tell him I like his work, and thumb his video up so that video is shared out there, and I share the videos here. And if you like any of the videos that I might have done, I'd appreciate you do the same thing. See, YouTube's got some sort of deal going on where pretty much any kind of money that you would have made from advertisement, they find ways around not giving you any kind of return on that. So even for me, it's never been about money. So, you know, I couldn't care less whether or not I got any out of it. It was kind of nice there for a minute when the AdSense would send a few extra dollars. I could get some some parts to build more projects for more videos. But I'm not taking this website to the extreme where I'm out here trying to get people to send me donations. I'm trying to put this information on the table. The best way that you can support me is by to share the information to somebody else. That's it. I'm not asking for any financial gain or even any personal recognition. All I want you to do is share this information on your social media networks and try to show people what's possible. Because that's the only way in my mind that we're ever going to get any of this information out there to everybody and to take this world in a different direction than what we've seen it already. Everybody wants to make the world a better place. The best way to make it a better place is rely on those who are reliable, which is the average Joe. Those are the ones that you can trust. Those are the ones rushing into the hurricane disasters or tornado disasters or earthquake disasters and helping out their brothers and sisters around the world. And if the governments of the world and the environmentalists of the world say we got a problem, we need to repair this problem, and you've got people shouting out at all four points of the compass that we got the answers, all you got to do is implement them, the solutions are on the table. I've had people come on this radio deal here before in our chat rooms or even on other networks and mouth off at me and tell me, oh, all you ever do is talk, you don't put no solutions out there. Well, apparently they weren't listening hard enough. They could have literally went back and listened to all the podcasts, and they heard we've talked about everything from induction heating to all different types of battery technology, things that Robert Murray Smith has been doing, things that Russ from RWG Research and Zero Fossil Fuels and Lid Motor and Deeds out there and Ryan Abrams and Terry Woodruff and all these guys that's been researching alternative energy and Tesla technology, Bedini circuits, the Slayer Exciter circuits, ways in which you could use energy differently. All that information's been on this radio show. All that information's been available to everybody all along. And we have the capability to make solid-state circuitry. They call them inverters. We can turn AC or DC current into AC current. We can turn AC current back into DC current. We can take either one of those currents, and we can turn them into plasma technology for heating and lighting and all kinds of stuff. Dr. Royal Raymond Rife made the Rife machine that uses specific frequencies to go in and target diseases and be able to wipe them things out without damaging the cell right next to it. We've talked about hemp technologies, all the different products that you can use from hemp. We've talked about all the different types of health benefits from that. And Barry, who comes on here every once in a while, talks about certain types of mushrooms with health benefits. There's so many different solutions that we put on the table throughout all these years that if only implemented on a wide range, spectrum of people throughout all different countries, cultures, and stuff like that, there's no reason why we can't resolve every single problem out there. That's what I've been trying to say all along. Sure. Yeah.
I just said...
You cut out, brother. Folks, we're having technical difficulties because he's over in the Philippines. He ain't got a really good connection. Type it in the chat room and I'll say it for you there. Anyway, the technology's already been around. It's just you take these pieces of the puzzle, you put them in the right order, and you got perfect efficient machines. Right now, they tell you that the average internal combustion engine is only 30 some odd percent efficient. And using the GEET, they said they can get another 30% efficiency out of it. Using hydrogen technology, you could bring that thing up even higher than that. There's so many different ways that you could make the internal combustion engine so much more efficient. If there was ever a case for over-unity, the internal combustion engine would be that case, because an internal combustion engine will generate enough waste heat that if you do not keep that thing cool, it will literally generate enough power to destroy itself. Everything from all the different losses that they talk about in physics, you know, and the reason why people like to try to quote thermodynamics, why things ain't possible, is because there's losses or whatever. That's because they don't understand how to use it properly. If you design that engine properly, it will not get hot, except for where you want it to get hot, and then whatever leftover heat from that point can be recaptured in the form of storable energy. Usable energy. Using the heat of the cylinder to literally keep your fuel warm at all times and pre-treat it so that by the time it goes through an atomizer and then into a vaporizer, it's in its smallest form being injected in just the amount of quantity that you need in order to be able to create the combustion from compression ignition. You know? Let me see what... Okay, there you are.
Yeah, I'm back again.
All right, so look, what was you trying to say?
What I was trying to say is 2 weeks is not enough here. Things move very, very slowly. Come for a month.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Because you know what? When the rubber meets the road, the onus is on you. All these inventions, I mean, I showed you a redneck generator to a mechanic that fixed my Pajero, and he was blown away. Really?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, it's a lawnmower engine hooked up to an alternator with an inverter. It works. This guy wants to meet you.
Cool.
He's a very, very good mechanic.
Well, I'd love to meet him too. There's a guy out there that it goes by the name Death Man on YouTube. And I love his teaching method as far as making circuitry. He literally draws out the picture in such a fashion that you can print this picture out and you can lay the parts right on top of it and solder them right where they need to be, and without any kind of real electronic knowledge, you can put a circuit together that will serve a purpose. And so I think we could actually do the same thing for a lot of these projects. What do you think?
I think you need to send me a parts list so I can acquire all the stuff we need before you get it.
Yep.
No, I don't know.
Well, give me a priority list of things that are that you want to start with as far as projects, and then I can work on the best methods for each one of them and a parts list for each one of them. Because,
well, Shaziz, let's put it a different way. Why don't I tell you my problems? Then you can provide the solutions.
Well, I know one of which. I know one of which was power storage, which we got that figured out. And as far as heat, and we also talked about that boat motor that was broke down on the deal. I think we could engineer literally an engine that would go on there that would never break down.
Buddy, you're just teasing me, aren't you?
No, I'm serious.
I've so many things to fix here that I've... Do you know, I fixed the pull cord off a generator.
Yeah.
With nylon rope.
Well,
it took me 2 hours to repair the retraction spring on a pull cord generator. Because we had a brownout. There was an earthquake about 50 kilometers from here, 8.0 earthquake. We had no electricity for nearly 6 weeks.
Well, what if we turn?
But I tell you what, I went down to the convent and I had to take apart the generator because the cord was broken. It took me 2 hours to fix it. Next time, take me 10 minutes.
Well, what if we took and built...
It's about learning.
What if we took and built an air starter for that same type of generator that could be literally moved from one generator to the next?
Now, that would be cool.
Essentially, if you go look at pneumatic tools, like torque wrenches and stuff like that, the ones that they pull the lug nuts off of your tires with, they only require about, I think, 60 to 90 PSI in order to be able to turn. And so using just something as simple as a hand pump, you can put enough pressure into a tank that will turn that air tool long enough to kick that engine over. And so this would be something that if the pull cord ever went down, all you'd have to do is put a little socket on the top of the deal and hit that with the air tool and spin that sucker around and get it to fire right up. Man, I'll tell you what, where there is a will, there is a way. Plain and simple. So, you know...
Well, buddy?
Yeah?
I'm in a place where people need solutions. And when I started on TNS Radio with Vin, he said to me, I don't care if you talk for 2 hours, 3 hours. In that time, just give one solution.
Yeah. We give hundreds and thousands. As we've been doing this.
Now it's time.
How many years have we been at this, Steve?
Oh, since about 2009.
Yeah.
2010.
And, you know, if you're listening to this show and it sparks an idea off, I mean, there's all the other ways to get pressure. For example, I did a video called Physics Toy where you can literally store air pressure. This thing would be an amazing teaching tool if somebody wanted to mass market that and send it out to all the different schools and stuff like that. I took a water bottle and a balloon and drilled one little hole in the bottom of the water bottle, and it teaches you about pressure and vacuum and all that kind of stuff there. When you open up the lid on it, if you put your finger over the hole and try to blow the balloon up, you can't blow the balloon up because the pressures, once they equalize out, will stop. But if you take your finger off the hole and you push the pressure in the balloon, you can air that balloon up and then use that same hole to put your finger over the top of the hole so that vacuum now takes over and will not allow that pressure to escape that balloon. And then you can sit there and hold it for hours with your finger over that hole, and as long as your finger was over that hole, then that balloon would stay pressurized, aired up. And so you could close the cap on this thing and then turn around and let go of the hole, and you'll hear just a little bit of going on out of that hole, the pressure equalizing, but that balloon will remain blown up until that you take the cap and release the pressure and let the air out. It's pretty amazing. And that's just a little plastic bottle with a balloon. But if you use the same knowledge from that, if you could imagine pressurizing a balloon with water, you know, like if you had a stream available where you could pump water into that balloon, on the opposite side of that container, you're now producing pressure, air pressure. You could literally build a water-powered air pressure tank that would pressurize your tank and be able to run your pneumatic tools. So that's just using the basic laws of physics to your advantage. It's so ridiculously simple, you know. And if we get this knowledge in the right hands of the people who would really appreciate it, like over there in the Philippines, man, I would be more than happy to show up. You still there?
It sure is. You'll be more than welcome to show up.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, man. You know, this little toy I'm holding in my hand, I have aired it up and I've left it on my shelf for a month and then turned around and released the pressure from it. Alright? That's just a toy. What we're talking about is taking all this little basic science like that and turning it into something that's going to better this world, that's going to raise somebody's standard of living up higher than what it is right now. not everybody has the luxury of being able to go to the hardware store and buy things, but, you know, fortunately for us, the world is kind of wasteful at this point in the time. You can actually find broken down machinery that other people didn't want and just carelessly discarded it wherever, and each and in every one of those there is like a gold mine right there. There's parts that could be repurposed and reused. You know? You think Junkyard Wars was a fun show to watch? Imagine taking that concept and putting it and making it that concept better to where now you took went to scrapyards and you showed people how to make other people's lives better by giving them efficient machinery that could be, you know, got by the average Joe. That's why education is so important, folks. You know, they should have been teaching these kids in school life skills like this. Some children didn't even have the luxury of being able to go to school and be able to learn these things. But because of shows like this and people like Steve that are willing to get out there and, you know, do it instead of talking about it, teaching them how to garden, you know, hooking them up with some solar panels and showing them about some energy deals, sharing some videos with them. We need more people like Steve out there in the field doing this kind of stuff. If you're interested in what we're talking about, you know, it's easy. Just jump in the chat room and say hi. We get together, we talk and work things out. We find, resources needed to get things done. You know, I don't live everywhere, but I sure can get on this piece of machinery that I have access. Like my buddy Steve always says, we have the vast sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips. And what we do with it, man, you know, it could be amazing or whatever, you know. It just blows me away that we're sitting in front of a gold mine and we're not even using it.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
No disrespect to the Philippines, but the vast sum of humanity's knowledge at your fingertips sometimes takes a little while to load.
Yeah. Well, we gotta figure out a better way to get them folks some internet, man. You know, it's terrible. They supposedly got all these doggone really high dollar satellites in there. You know, why don't we figure out a way to get some satellite internet service going on down there? At least, if nothing else, at least find one spot that we can get some really good internet down there. I bet the elite down there in the Philippines got really good internet.
50 meg on fiber is about the best you can get.
Yeah.
In this area.
Well.
The sad thing is, Typhoon Yolanda came to town.
Yeah.
About 4 years ago. It destroyed the lives of 50,000 people over a large area of coastline.
That's terrible.
But that meant that they started. Yeah, what they did is they started from scratch and started implementing fiber. So now a lot of people actually have very good internet. Where I'm working is in, like you said, a dark jungle hell.
Yeah.
There's a 16% gradient hill of 100 steps to get down to the convent that we're working with. That's not nice.
Yeah.
I carried six bottles of water down halfway, and a woman taller than me, in a country that most people look like hobbits, carried it the other half of the way, and I had to sit down for 20 minutes. Huh. It's hot here, mate. It's really, really hot. But I tell you what, I've been saying to the good lady nuns in the convent, when Jackie Chan runs up and down the hills, he learns kung fu. What do I get?
Tired?
Tired, sweaty, and being told to change my t-shirt every 5 minutes. Because these good lady nuns do look after you.
Hey, one of the things I remember about the Philippines is that you could like have a perfectly normal day, and then all of a sudden rain would move in and just dump, and then it'd be gone again. Is that still like
tell
that?
Tell me about it. I have a Pajero with a sunroof that leaks.
Well, do they have water collection systems down there to catch some of that?
No, but I've been building them.
Cool.
There is a lack of imagination here, but there isn't a lack of interest. If you show them what to do,
yeah,
they're very happy to capitalize on the benefits of it. It's just there's, I don't know how to explain it. Grade 3 education.
Well, I think that with a little bit of patience and some effort, I think we could make that a lot better. Honestly.
I walk down the street and everybody smiles to me. It just is, I've been doing guerrilla gardening for the last year.
Yeah?
I go out at 1 o'clock in the morning with 20 tomato plants, cucumbers, string beans, you name it. People wake up in the morning and say, where did that come from?
Well, I'm saying that's probably a really good benefit, man, because the community starts doing that for each other, and then you don't have to worry about anybody going hungry. That's amazing.
There are a lot of people here with a very limited education, but they're not stupid.
Yeah.
If you show them off, they'll follow it.
Well, that's another thing too, man. People learn faster whenever they do things, and if you get to sit there and show them how to do it, they may not have a complete understanding of what's actually going on a, you know, microscopic scale, but they understand mechanically what's happening there, and they know how to repeat it. So, you know, with that said, all this high-tech terminology that they teach people in college, as far as I'm concerned, it ain't nothing more than a hindrance to society because the average Joe don't understand it. And here's one thing. There are certain segments of the society that have militaries where there's only one guy who is extremely trained in one specific job. He's the best of the best in that field. But they don't have nobody to back him up in case somehow something happens to him. His one job, there's only one person that could do it. And so what they should have had all along was everybody on that ship knowing every part of that ship so that they could turn around and if anything happened to anybody, somebody could just move over and take up the slack, if you understand what I'm saying. That's
yeah,
what...
I mean, information shouldn't be kept on the shelf and kept private.
Yeah. Well, the terminology and the way that people explain stuff to people, it's no wonder people have to go to college and spend thousands of dollars to get, you know, this piece of paper that may or may not get them a job when they get out into society. Whatever happened to good old hands-on? There used to be this thing around here they called Job Corps, where they bring some people over there and they teach them a trade, and they'd be hands-on, where they teach them how to do roofing and construction and electronics and electrical, whatever, you know, plumbing. And they'd actually physically get in there and do the job, and at the same time would go to school to get basically documented for being able to do the job. So, you know, you get a diploma or something when you're done. But in the meantime, they're actually working and learning hands-on through, like, apprenticeship programs and being able to do that kind of stuff. And when they come out, they're better. They know a trade. So, you know, there are ways. But I think that the word of mouth and sharing the information via videos and how-tos and stuff like that, and even if we could actually get somebody to help us, you know, start printing some books. You know? I'm just one guy.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I'm just one guy, but if you got some people that have, you know, access to resources who want to assist in some project like that to benefit humanity, I'd be willing to sit down for hours on end and share information and talk and troubleshoot anything, and then we can figure out who's the best to just sit there and put the graphics to it, you know. Or even that, the internet is full of pictures. And we can illustrate these books to the extent where people can understand exactly how it goes. That's why I like Daft Man, because whenever he puts these things together, he makes it so incredibly simple. And, you know, that's the kind of guy we need on the team. Somebody who's going to make it so simple that everyone can understand it. And this technology isn't rocket science. It never has been. But if you want to go, like for example, I was a boiler technician in the Navy. I went through boiler technician A school. When I got out of that, I went in hands-on working as a boiler technician. And when I got out, I went to go get a job at a boiler union. They told me I had to have this many hours of geometry and trigonometry and all that kind of stuff in order to join the boiler union. What in the heck did I need all that math? I knew that boiler inside and out better than the majority of the people they had working for them already. But because of that, I never got a job with the boiler union. You know?
Yeah, but that's all about jumping through hoops.
Yeah.
Putting your life on the line for your country wasn't enough.
Nope. And, you know, and to make it so doggone hard that you have to go to college for 5 or 10 years to get certified to do something, you know, what good's the certification if you can't get a job? And what good's that information if only a few people know it? You think doctors make so much money because, you know, just because? No, doctors make so much money because it's so much to become a doctor. Cost you thousands of dollars to go through all the college and years of training and all that kind of stuff could have been taught hands-on, where you literally have somebody who already had the knowledge, and you bring these people in there and you show them firsthand how to do it and work their way up the ladder, just like, you know, any union construction. You start off as a laborer and you work your way up. The more knowledge you get, the more responsibility they give you, and so on down the line. Well, that kind of system right there works. You know, but if
it is.
Yeah.
Do you know what the difference between the military, whether it's Air Force, Army, Navy, whatever, your life depends on making sure you can be replaced.
That's right.
But in the commercial world, you want to keep all the knowledge you can to make sure nobody can replace you.
Yep.
And that's a sad truth of the world we live in.
That's right, and it goes in every field. You know, they say ignorance is no excuse to the law. Well, here's the problem with that, is that the law is so complicated that you got to go out and hire some attorney that can speak the terminology of the judge so that you don't get, you know, basically taken to the cleaners when you go to court. And if you ain't got the money to afford an attorney, you're pretty much screwed. And that's the way it works. And it's ridiculous. But instead of making everything simple, everything had to be made as hard as possible with all kinds of crazy terminology. Oh, for Pete's sake, the doctor's still writing Latin. How many people actually speak Latin? You know?
Yeah.
Latin or shorthand.
Catholic priest.
Yeah. Well, that kind of stuff right there makes it so that the knowledge is, only for the specific few. The way that we explain mad science out here is as simple as physically possible, simple as humanly possible, so that everybody understands. Folks, we're down to the wire. This is about time to go. But, before I say, the reason why Mad Science does what we do is so that we can give everybody a chance to at least have the benefits that everybody else has got. So, you know, before we get up out of here, you got any last words of wisdom, Steve?
It's been a long time since I got to jump into Mad Science. And I miss you.
Yeah.
And I missed the show.
I'm
just so sorry. I can't do it more often.
But did you notice one thing? It was like we never were apart through the whole deal. We just jump right in there together, and man, that's it. We make a perfect team. I would love to come to Philippines and visit with you.
As my Jamaican buddy said, you're like my brother from another mother.
The same here, man. Well, folks,
peace out.
Energy is free. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. If you can't find the information to get it done, come over here. We'll help you find it. If you got something to share with the world, Shazoo's Radio is the place to do it, you know. And so with that said, the microphone's open, the chat rooms are open, and if you want to help us out, if you really want to support us...
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.